are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I am here with my co-host, Uncle Dig. How are you doing today, Uncle Dig?
I am doing great, Lucas. It is springtime, and spring has almost sprung. It is time for spring prep. My peppers are going to start hardening off probably May 15th, and I am already hardening off some cannabis outdoors.
Oh, wow. You are way ahead of me on all that. I have been just planting a little bit at a time, and I still haven't planted my full-size garden just because of the weather. I haven't really been able to get out and dig in my compost and everything because it's just been like a mud hole up here in Tacoma. So I am waiting. I think this week I'm going to be able to get it all fully planted. And I always struggle with the seasons up here because of the wet and the cold. So I think this year we'll be able to test whether if you plant your garden in May, whether it will work right in the Northwest.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of microclimates around here. I'm in a hotter, drier microclimate than you are, so I can start a little bit earlier. Up in the Tacoma area, I think people are generally going into the ground more in late May and early June, are having more success doing that. So different parts of the Northwest are on different timelines. I'm in southern Oregon, in gardening zone 8B, and I think, Lucas, you're closer up there to a higher gardening zone, aren't you, than 8?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the gardening zone, but it's not always easy to like grow like beans here in Tacoma is not easy. And I live here in the city, and so there's a lot of like shadows and things from buildings. So my yard does not get full sun. So I have really narrowed it down that pumpkins for pies, potatoes, and greens grow really good at my house. So that's kind of, I've kind of narrowed it down, and that's kind of what I've been focusing on. Anything else, I'm just collecting carbon and having fun growing it.
So this is actually really an interesting point. We're not going to get too off, but you and I are actually in the same gardening zone 8B. But there are significant differences in moisture that we get this time of year that I don't think that takes into account. So everyone, gardening zone is helpful, but not a complete picture of your growing area.
Yeah, and speaking of a gardening zone, we just kind of passed the biggest gardening zone of the year, and that was 420. And before we get into our news, we are going to talk about some 420 statistics and some things that happened on 420. And as we know, that is sort of the unofficial cannabis holiday in the United States. Wouldn't it be great if we got it as a federal holiday one day, Dig?
But yeah, we should give people the day off.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and look at a couple of those numbers. Just real quick, some impressive numbers came out with the sales. So tell us about some of those sales numbers real quick, Dig, when it comes to 420.
Okay. 420 experienced 130% increase in general sales during this last 420. To give people a perspective on other holidays that generate an increase in general sales, the Super Bowl generates a sales increase of 25% last year and 16% in the U.S. So cannabis is more popular than American football. Something else that's interesting is that for flower, Colorado, Massachusetts, Missouri, and Oklahoma saw a 103%, 234%, 233%, and 170% increase respectively. So we are seeing some massive growth numbers in 2022 for cannabis.
Yeah, and this was expected. I think the sales numbers when it comes to cannabis are just going to continue to grow as it becomes more and more popular and more legalized. And as we've mentioned before, we're waiting on federal banking, and then when that hits, the cannabis sales per year is expected to be into the billions, into the mid part of this century, and it's just going to keep growing. And I had a pretty good 420, just kind of hung around and rolled up a CBG Canagar and smoked that, and that was really nice. So just kind of kept it on the down low. What'd you do for 420, Dick?
Yeah, I just kind of hung out. I did go to a sale at the local dispensary. A lot of times they have some good deals, so I picked up a quarter ounce of some cannabis, and I actually bought a blunt, which I don't normally do, and smoked a blunt. And I generally smoke nothing but blunts on 420 every year, so I probably had about 8 blunts that day. It was a really nice day.
Nice. And we are about to get to our news, but before we get to our news, I just wanted to mention real quick, One of the new features that has come to the Candles Corner is our underwriters. And we've had two so far, and I really want to thank them for being part of the show, and that's Dr. Green Thumbs and The Lunar. And I just want to mention to the audience that in the spots where I say this show is underwritten by, I will mention you can find more information wherever this show is syndicated, and that is over at our blog, which is thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. And we're going to be slowly building that out into sort of our base for our streaming subscriptions. We're going to be getting that into iTunes and Spotify and Pandora and all those different places. And that's really what we're going to be doing over this entire season. So if you go over there and look at our blog and it looks a little sparse, it is a big work in progress. And we're also going to be building out our YouTube channel. And I'm going to be putting episode 1 through this episode, which this is episode 43, Dig, that we're on the Cannabis Corner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We're going to be putting those all on YouTube. We're going to leave off episode 1 through 39 off the podcast because it actually includes some copyrighted material. I don't want to get the algorithms all confused with all that. So we're going to stick with just the 40 and above for the streaming services. So just wanted to bring the audience kind of update what we're doing over here. And the Cannabis Corner is definitely a growing, ongoing project, Dig. And I just want to thank you again for being a part of the show.
Oh, I'm having a blast. Thanks for having me.
And I just want to mention real quick, Dig, for the audience to stay tuned, because later on in the show, we have a Tacoma, Seattle-based cannabis technology firm, Harvest Direct Enterprises, and they are going to be on today to talk to us about the entourage effect. They're going to explain that 0.87% drop in THC concentrations that we see on our packaging. So they have some really good information. Z and Zach from Harvest Direct Enterprises will be joining us, the Z team.
And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
All right, so we are going to get on to our news, and we're going to start with a bit of a federal update. And that's going to start with President Joe Biden actually did some cannabis clemencies. And
bing bong.
Yeah. It wasn't that many, though, Dig. And people like yourself and me, I have to admit, are a little disappointed. I think people are trying to be hopeful and say this is a start to something more. But maybe when it comes back around towards the election, they might do something. But it just could have been way more, I think.
I think that they should probably just deschedule it and work on a executive order that grants blanket clemency, at least in the federal prison, which I understand is possible, if not a little bit of hard work. He should just, if he can't deschedule it, then he should release all federal cannabis prisoners, which I think is under the supreme executive power that he wields.
Yeah, I think so, too. And then that would just go along with the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who actually came out and reiterated his stance that the federal government should not be using any money to prosecute people for cannabis possession or use. Now, that's a big loophole, because if you're selling cannabis, he's not including you in that statement.
But he's also excluding you if you're home growing.
Yes. If you get caught busted at home growing cannabis, or you're busted on your land somewhere growing cannabis, that is excluding you. He did specifically use the word possession. So that is a start. So that's a bit of our federal update, and there's not much more going on the federal level. I know I did see Chuck Schumer say that he was going to try to get the federal legalization going again in August, Dig.
In the Senate?
Yeah, in the Senate.
Yeah, folks, that's not going to happen. I'd be willing to bet one of my plants that it's not going to happen.
So now we're going to get on to our next news story, and this is actually some pretty good news when it comes to cannabis, and that comes out of California. And California is actually considering a bill that would allow individuals who are growing cannabis on 1 acre or less. That's a really key number there. That those folks can take their products and start selling them at farmers markets. And I think this really starts to get more towards what we think about as legalization, which is, for me, anybody can sell cannabis to their friends or neighbors, just like they could sell tomatoes or peas or anything that they could put together to make a product out of.
Yes. And there are some key notes of opposition that the article mentioned. The United Cannabis Business Association argues that this would violate the state's adult use cannabis law, which they're right, but this would also change the adult use cannabis law. So this would kind of fix everything. Also, the executive director for Farmers Market Alliance in Davis suggested that the farmers market is a food business and that cannabis is not a food. Now, folks, I understand the feed your head argument, but this is an imperfect argument anyway. Farmers markets don't only sell food products. They sell toys for children. They sell all kinds of woodworking items. They sell tools. They don't just sell cannabis, sell food. So adding cannabis to that stuff would be an excellent product from the land that a farmer grew to add to your farmer's market. And I'm really excited about this. I actually was really jealous of some of the pop-up markets that would pop up in bigger cities, like in Tacoma had the medical market for a while, and some of California had pop-up markets in the early days of legalizations. And I would like to bring that back. I think that's cool. It builds community. And it builds a sense of camaraderie among smaller growers.
Yeah, I think so too. And as we mentioned, we don't necessarily think this bill goes far enough, but it does begin to start to roll back some of that taboo of cannabis can't be sold at things like farmers market or out in public. And I think it's just going to be good for the general public to be out and about and go to a farmers market and see cannabis on sale there. I think that will be a really good thing. And for anybody that's ever tried to sell things at a farmer's market, it's not an easy process. There still is a lot of red tape and a lot of hoops you got to jump through. And a lot of them have you have to have so many amount of sales to be able to be a part of the farmer's market. So this is not just going to be a situation where anybody can just walk out there and start selling cannabis. But it is a move in the right direction.
Right.
The next story, we're going to stay out here in the West, and that is looking at Arizona. And Arizona, they legalized cannabis recently. They have an adult use market and a medical cannabis market. And the headlines started going around this week that, lo and behold, Arizona collected about three times as much taxes for cannabis sales as they did for alcohol and tobacco. And that's a pretty big margin, Dig.
Yeah, it is. But they, you brought up an interesting point. But before we get to that, let's just look at the numbers. Tax deposits to the state's general fund for medical and adult use cannabis reached about $6.3 million in March, compared to $1.7 million from tobacco and $3.7 million from alcohol sales. Now, Lucas, during the show prep, brought a very interesting point up to me about these high tax dollars maybe being due and partially to the higher tax rates on cannabis, not just higher sales.
Yeah, I wanted to go dig a little deeper on this headline because I thought that was a good headline. Like, oh, and that's how the news is presenting it, is like, oh, wow, look, weed is outselling alcohol and tobacco. Well, I was like, okay, well, that's great. But I went and looked, and it's actually, so in Arizona, the alcohol tax, they are 22nd in the nation, or 21st in the nation for their wine tax as far as the highest goes. They are 32nd. They have the 32nd highest beer tax and the 22nd highest excise tax on hard alcohol. And then cigarettes are only $2 per pack excise tax. Cannabis has a 16% excise tax. So there's a bit of discrepancies there as far as the tax numbers go. And I really believe it just shows, rather than there's more cannabis being sold in Arizona, that kind of like California, they're just taxing cannabis too high.
Right. And you can see that these high taxes on cannabis have led to thriving black markets. But that's not the only problem. The whole point of a sin tax, which is one thing you might call these, right? They're taxing a behavior that they're trying to discourage, and they're trying to discourage it by taxing it. Sin taxes don't do that. They don't affect consumption. They're built into consumption at a certain point. So at a certain point, it's just the government stealing extra money from businesses it deems sinful. It doesn't work, and it's a dumb way to run a tax schema.
Yeah, and it really the syntax is part target poor people, and like you said, they don't work. Washington State is really bad with things like syntaxes, and it's an upside down tax system. So these kind of taxes should be on the beer and alcohol manufacturers, not necessarily on the people buying the taxes. But you know, $2 for excise tax on a pack of cigarettes is not that much, really, compared to other places. But a 16% cannabis tax, that's pretty high compared to other states. Some states don't even have an excise tax on cannabis. Washington State has a 37% excise tax on cannabis.
Yeah, that's too much.
All right, so we're going to get on to our last story, and this is going to be more of a informational segment. We did have a story. We were going to talk about the 10 best seed banks where to get cannabis seeds, but Dig took a closer look at it, and there were some information discrepancies with our article. So Dig and I are just going to talk real quick about some tips and how to get cannabis seeds and some tips on using seeds. So just real quick, Dig, you have bought some seeds online. I have not ever done that before. But before I ask you some tips on buying seeds online, I just want to mention that there are reports, and you can double check my information here, that the DEA actually said officially that sending cannabis seeds through the mail is not illegal because they are 0.3% less THC. They don't have THC in them, so that categorizes them as a hemp seed. And that makes them not illegal. So if you want to send some seeds across the country to your buddy from Washington State or your friend, that is legal, Dig. But we're talking more buying them from like seed banks. So do you have a couple tips for our audience when you're buying seeds online?
Yeah, I would shop around. I would look at least one or two seed banks. I like to go to seed banks that are located in the same country as me. You may not be able to do that, and certain genetics I've bought from seed banks in other countries, and that's fine. A lot of times I try to buy them from a business that's reselling them domestically just because it makes me feel more comfortable to give to a business that's closer to me. But if you're not a locavore, that's you don't have to do that. But another thing you want to look for is like where are they like – you have to research like who's breeding for them or like their reputation online. And I would go deeper than a Google review. Google review is not the whole picture. What I would do is I would go online and I would search for the seed banks reviews. And then I would also go to some cannabis podcasters and cannabis content producers, because a lot of these seed banks send a lot of YouTubers and people that produce content freebie packs to try, so you can go and look and see the kind of results that people are getting from those seeds before you even buy them. So I suggest that you do some pretty deep research for yourself on the particular cultivar you're buying. There are also online cannabis grow diaries where people have grown the genetics from the company you're thinking about buying them from, the same seeds. And they have shown what they've done and what kind of results you get. So you can plan your whole grow with that seed based on other people's gardens and what they've done before you ever buy them. And you can kind of decide whether they're right for you or not. Another thing I would also think about when buying seeds is what are you looking for? If you're someone who likes to have a little weed and relax, buying a sativa dominant one might not be the best idea for you. And when I say sativa dominant, I just mean in effect, right? If the website says it's uplifting and energetic and you're trying to relax, that's not what you're going to want to do. You're going to want to focus on the effects you're looking for. Another thing to think about is stability. Online, you want to look specifically is if people say the seeds are stable or not. Like, are they similar when they're grown out? Are there only a couple of phenotypes? Is it a pretty tight genetic line? When I say that, if I pop 10 seeds, am I going to get, you know, 10 fairly similar plants? Or am I going to get 10 completely different phenotypes that look completely differently and taste differently and smell differently than one another? Like, how stable are their genetics? And you and reputation does go a long way in the seed banking industry. If you start typing in certain seed bank names, you will start getting bad reviews almost immediately. And that should be a tip to you to be like, hey, be careful doing business with this place. Also, if they charge a lot of extra transaction fees, you don't have to do that anymore. That's a practice from legacy when it was still very illegal. The DEA can say what they want to say. So once they legalized hemp and mailing hemp seed through the postal service, it basically became legal to mail cannabis seeds through the postal service as well. So you shouldn't worry too much about legality if you're in a legal state. However, if you're in an illegal state, there are certain intent to distribute laws and certain other cultivation specific laws where once the seeds pass into your possession, cultivation can be a loose term, and depending on how aggressive your state is, as soon as you germinate them, those seeds, you can start having problems.
Yeah, so you want to be real careful once you get the seeds. And one of the things with law enforcement that I always say, you just really want to be careful because you never really quite know what they're going to do. The DEA might say one thing, but the local sheriff might really hate cannabis, and the mail people tell him that there's some seeds over there at the cannabis at the post office. You just might not be sure what's going to happen. So you still want to be careful out there. And I totally agree with Dig. You want to be looking for reputable seed banks, especially when you're working with numbers. So like Colorado, you can grow 6 plants at home. Well, you don't want 3 of your plants to be not a stable phenotype or a genotype, and then you get 6 months into it and your flowers are all poofy and they don't grow right. So, and that's one of the challenges of growing with bag seeds is you never really know. And when you have all these numbers restrictions, you might pop 5 seeds. Some of them will work, some of them won't. Some will be a runt, some will be a male, some will be female. Yep. So one of the tips I want to mention is they might cost a little more, but I would definitely try to suggest getting feminized seeds or the autoflower seeds so that you know that they're going to flower. Because if you're just getting regular seeds, you're going to be dealing with that male and female dichotomy and issue. And that could, you know, that's going to cost you. If it wasn't for the numbers, I would say just go ahead with it. But when you're restricted, it will cost you space. And then you also don't want to grow a plant with electricity and then it turn into a male plant. That's for me as a low income patient, that's really a hassle too, because then you just wasted all that money and time and your nutrients and everything goes into it. So
I think that's and it's also maybe next episode we could talk about clones, because I think clones are a good way to bridge that predictability gap if you can source them effectively.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. And we are back on the Cannabis Corner with this week's interview. And this week we are joined by Z and Zach of Harvest Direct. Harvest Direct is a Seattle-based cannabis technology firm, and they're going to be talking to us about a couple different things. So Z and Zach, let's have you go ahead and introduce yourselves.
So my name is Ziad Grebe. I'm the founder and CEO of Harvest Direct. Everyone calls me Z. I am a professional chemist. That's where I got my undergrad in with chemistry. And then from there, went into the cannabis testing lab arena with Zach. And then from there, started Harvest Direct.
Yeah. And my name is Zach Azard. I'm the president and chief science officer of Harvest Direct Enterprises. I came on board about 2.5 years ago, and we've been feverish in the lab ever since. We have a whole new way of looking at how the cannabis plant can best be made into products that provide all the benefits to anyone who's looking to have them. And we're excited to talk about that with you today.
I know both of you guys have a chemistry background, but how has that helped you kind of make this leap into the cannabis industry?
So I started off in college. That's where I first discovered cannabis. And at the same time, I was getting my degree in chemistry. So during all of those fun little sessions, we were actually learning a lot about the product, about how it affects you, and really about the versatility of cannabis. That was when I really noticed that the entourage effect was a huge factor in the way cannabis performs biologically. So from there, we noticed that there were benefits to profile preservation. So essentially making products that contain more of the entourage effect than the current products that are currently in the market. So like I said, so started off in college, gained some insights there. I actually used to sell some cannabis capsules to pay for books and pay for tuition. After I graduated, I started working at Confidence Analytics, which is the largest volume cannabis testing lab in the state of Washington. And that's where I met my co-founder, Zach. And he was the chief science officer there, or the scientific director. And I came on as his laboratory assistant. So after about a year and a half working at Confidence Analytics, I started Harvest Direct alongside my brother. His name is Ahmed Gharib. And then from there, in 2018, we closed our seed round. We won first place at the MJ VizCon Innovation Battlefield. And then we hired Zach. We got our first brands into the market, and we won first place in every product category we entered at last year's High Times Hemp Cup with those brands. And that's really, it all stems from the differentiation that our technology brings to the table. And then more recently, we've gotten Steve D'Angelo and Andrew D'Angelo as part of our advisory board. And then from now, so like the plan moving forward for us is to license our technology into the different territories that allow cannabis products to be sold. So here in Washington, we're going to be offering Lacey as a service to local processors. And then in the Canada area and in four states in the United States, we're planning to deploy our technology into those territories. So five deployments this year and then 20 deployments next year.
Yeah, congratulations on winning those awards. And I was taking a look at some things online. I noticed that, like you said, you raised $1.5 million in 2018. I was wondering if you wanted to talk about a minute. I know cannabis banking has been in the news a lot lately, but what are some of the challenges that businesses like yourself face when we're raising money as opposed to a regular business that's not federally illegal like cannabis?
Sure. So because we don't actually make products, we're considered to be non-plant touching. So really what we do is we analyze the cannabis supply chain and we find out what parts in that supply chain are most destructive to the entourage effect or to the plant profile, and then we invent technologies that solve those processing inefficiencies. So because we're on the tech side and we're non-plant touching, and because we license our technology, we don't use it to push our own brands, we've had zero issues with banking or with investors in that regard. But our friends, our customers, our licensees, they definitely highlight for us just how unfavorable the current banking environment is. Definitely a lot of challenges.
So you mentioned the entourage effect a couple times. Would you like to discuss and tell our audience just a little bit about what do you mean by that?
So the entourage effect is and shared with a lot of other herbal medicines, but the entourage effect is really what makes cannabis the most versatile herbal remedy that we know about as humans. It's also why two different strains that have the same THC percentage or, you know, the same CBD percentage to produce very different effects in people that consume those products. Really, the entourage effect is hundreds, maybe even thousands of different compounds, chemical compounds that work together to make that total series, you know, experience of effects that someone would actually experience when they consume the flower as it is presented. Now, any medical consumer knows that in order to really get this comes out of the raw flower itself. So really what Harvest Direct is all about, like Z was mentioning, is we try to bridge the gap beyond flower with all of that super awesome, versatile entourage effect and bring all that versatility into all of the amazing non-smoked product forms that have been brought out into the market in the last couple decades with the advent of legalization.
So anybody out there who has tried to make their own oil or butter or any kind of type of cannabis edible or non-smokable cannabis product, they have experience when you decarboxylate it or heat up your cannabis, you lose a lot of that, the terpenes and I believe probably some of the cannabinoids as well just because of the heating process. So can you talk a little bit about how your company gets around that and is able to bring the entourage effect to the non-smokable products?
So, I mean, really, it's all about the amazingness of our LACI technology. That is, stands for lossless activation chamber, is the LAC part. And really, lossless activation is just as it sounds. So for anyone that's made your own brownies or what have you, you start by taking some flour, some cannabis flour, and you pop that on a cookie tray into the oven, and you cook that for a while to activate it. Because if you don't, then it won't do anything when you eat the product, right? But as anyone's experienced, as your house is smelling like the flour that you put in, obviously that's no longer in the flour. You know, just like you mentioned, Lucas, not only are we losing terpenes, we're degrading cannabinoids and all of the other classes of compounds that the testing lab doesn't yet test for that we still know are there because of existing science. It's just not routine yet. All of those compound classes are getting compromised too. So really the entourage effect is the right term to talk about all the stuff that's going on in there. It's not this, it's not that, it's everything.
So let's talk about some of the benefits of preserving all the entourage effect characteristics when we use non-smokable products, because everybody knows that the most popular cannabis product is the cannabis flower, and that pretty much guarantees the entourage effects when you smoke it. So tell us what is the benefit of getting those same entourage effects down to edibles or non-smokable products?
Okay, this is a really good question. So you pointed out, Lucas, that flower is able to deliver the entourage effect, and it does so instantaneously when you smoke it. And the same thing happens for dabs and other products. Really, so the issue comes in with non-smoked products because they require that decarb beforehand. And that decarb process ruins the entourage effect. And the entourage effect is what gives cannabis all of that versatility. So preserving it is very, very important. And when you are able to preserve it into non-smoked forms, you're able to give people the entourage effect that they're looking for in a form that doesn't require that they smoke. And as much as we all love smoking, like I love smoking a joint on Saturdays, at the end of the day, it's not valid from a clinical perspective. So like if someone is dealing with PTSD or chronic pain from cancer or any of the other conditions that cannabis has been shown to help, asking a medical patient to smoke is not the most preferred route of administration. And there's a lot of problems with smoking. So dosing inconsistencies, it still has a lot of stigma, and you will smell like marijuana. So there's a lot of drawbacks to smoking. But having said all of that, smoked cannabis flower is still the number one product type worldwide. And why is that? Because the 20% of consumers that consume 80% of the products, they heavily favor flower. And it's not because they love smoking, it's because they love getting the entourage effect instantaneously. So theoretically, if a company came along and was able to get you that same entourage effect instantaneously with none of the drawbacks of smoking, we could completely disrupt the way cannabis is being consumed. And for the greater health of everyone who uses it, including ourselves. So the reason we invented LACI is because Zach and I, we both have asthma. Like, we freaking love cannabis, but we have asthma. And there was no way to enjoy the versatility of cannabis and enjoy the entourage effect unless you smoked it. But that's really what motivated us to invent the LACI technology. And then one of the most interesting and most groundbreaking implication of our technology is, so because we're able to capture entire strains of cannabis in forms like capsules or tinctures or inhalers, we can allow for clinical trials on specific strains of cannabis. And if you think about it, that's absolutely mind-blowing. Like we were saying, cannabis is the most versatile herbal remedy known to mankind, but you wouldn't know that if you looked at the current clinical trial data that's being produced. And why is that? Because medical researchers are only using isolated cannabinoids like THC or CBD or some recombination of the two, and they're missing out on the full plant profile. They're missing out on the entourage effect. And that's why therapeutics or products that are made with only isolates are nowhere near as effective as smoking the flower. So our job, our mission really is to fill that gap in effect. so that you can get all of the benefits of cannabis, you can get all of the entourage effect and all of the nuance without having to smoke it. And when we do that, we allow for clinical trials on specific strains of cannabis. So really the overarching goal for us is to replace drugs like Ambien with Bubba Kush, to replace drugs like OxyContin with Blue Dream, and to replace drugs like Adderall with Thai Stick.
What is something on the cannabis chemistry horizon that we might not have heard about, that is kind of being talked about, that is going to be coming out soon, and or maybe in a year or two? So let's talk about that for a minute.
As far as I see it, there's really two topics that are kind of up in cannabis chemistry right now, if you will. One of them is kind of outside the scope of this conversation, and that's standardization. So whether that be standardizing cannabinoid content, or if we're talking about testing for the same pesticides in all the different states that have legalized cannabis, you know, all of those issues, a lot of those are chemistry facing, and I had a personal hand in a lot of that when I was working with the testing lab. But what we find more interesting here is that the entourage effect, as I was saying earlier, is more complex than just terpenes and cannabinoids. They're flavonoids. I want to say a connection of mine on LinkedIn just posted a book that they contributed to, where they talk about 18 different flavonoids that have been identified in cannabis. And flavonoids are a chemical class that are in a lot of other herbal medicines that have been studied for their medical properties in other contexts. So it makes sense that if they're in cannabis, they're probably part of the entourage effect. And truly, you know, I don't want to load down all the different jargon here, but this is a particular portion of the cannabis industry I'm personally really excited about, because after looking at all the lab data for all those years and writing all those test methods to find out what's in there, and seeing all these other things that we were just like, oh, well, you know, that's something we don't know what it is. We don't have a testing standard. Whatever. You know, we know it's there. We see it every time. And I can ask my instrument what the instrument thinks it is. But like I was saying earlier, we don't have that in routine testing yet, which is something that a lot of testing labs are working on. So, you know, hopefully we'll get to the point where the entourage effect is more than just these two things. And then also maybe, I'm thinking of the third one, so all of this huge complicated soup of chemistry words is way too much for the average consumer. And we're really, really aware of that, myself, very keenly, right? So coming up with a way to kind of shortcut all the jargon and provide people a reliable and predictable way that they can experience that entourage effect, that's another element that we're really focused on in Harvest Direct. And we, you know, if you want to add on to that. The way we address that is by effect binning. So you're not going into the store and asking, oh, what's highest in myrcene and what's highest in these individual compounds, and then doing all the math and creating an Excel sheet to figure out if it's going to produce that effect for you. Instead, we do the effect binning for you. So we've got an anonymized focus group that we give products to, and they tell us what the product does for them. And then from there, we can deduce that that's going to be the effect that it produces when someone takes it in the market.
Yeah, thank you, Zach. And it can be a real challenge to explain all this to people and consumers, and especially to people that aren't into cannabis. When you start going into all this, they're like, oh, okay, whatever. So it just can be really challenging. I think sometimes the regulators really get tired of hearing all of it.
Which is why we try to put it in forms that are more friendly to those kinds of people. Like my mom, she's a very strict Muslim woman, and like, to the point where, like, if I was found with a joint in my pocket in high school, I would have been kicked out of the house. But because we're able to put cannabis with all of its effects in forms like capsules, she's actually a user of our products now. So making, like, legitimizing cannabis by capturing it in forms that people like my mom or your grandma would be comfortable taking. And that way we increase the use of cannabis and we increase the therapeutic potential, the impact that cannabis is having in people's lives.
Some of us have noticed the, I call it the THC coefficient, the 0.87 drop in cannabis percentages and weight when you decarboxylate. I was wondering if you could just take a minute to explain what that 0.87 means and then why that process happens when you decarboxylate cannabis.
Yeah. I answer that question a whole lot at the testing lab. I'd love to. In fact, I wish I could show you the chemical structure of THCA that I have sitting on the table over there. I could just pull something off and demonstrate. But basically this. So the plant makes cannabinoids in a form called cannabinoid acids. And that basically has an extra little chunk of the molecule added on to it that keeps it from working in your body the way that it does once it's been activated or decarboxylated. And that literally means to take the carboxyl group, the carbon dioxide, essentially, off of that THCA molecule to turn it into THC. Now, when you do the math on how much the molecule weighs, THCA is about 87 or 88% THC and about 12 or 13% CO2 by weight. So when you do decarb on pure THCA, you get out 87.7% of the weight that you put in, and the rest of it, 12.3%, is carbon dioxide. That same thing happens for all the other cannabinoid acids. So for CBD, it starts off as CBDA, and so forth. So this process applies across the board to all of the cannabinoids that the cannabis plant makes, which is why our Lacey system is so well-tuned to address that specific problem.
We are about to get out of here, and before we do, just tell us some current projects that you're working on and what is coming up in the future for Harvest Direct, and tell the audience how they can get in touch with you guys.
Sure. So the best way to get in touch with us is to visit our website, and that's harvestdirect.co.co. Alternatively, you can find us on LinkedIn if you want to communicate with us directly. We would love to hear from you guys. So our projects and our plans really moving forward is twofold. So number one, deploying the technology that we've currently, that we've scaled to a commercial level, and that's called Lacey. So this year we're deploying with five customers in the THC market. And then also continuing to innovate and building other technologies that solve other processing inefficiencies in the cannabis market.
All right. Thanks, Z. Thank you, Zach.
There you go.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Advocates for Medical Cannabis. Learn more about this organization at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com.
All right, for this show's It's a Bus segment, we are going to move over here to California. And here we have a case where Dick and I were talking that the earlier story we were talking about the farmer's market may help some individuals like this. Although, like we said, getting to a farmer's market is really difficult. So even more legalization might be what's needed to really remedy cases like this. But for me, this is just another example of some people get to grow weed and sell it, and some people don't. And so tell us about the case over here in California is on the news. The California Highway Patrol pulled over a father and son duo for speeding. And what'd they find, Dig?
It was on 419, too. So around 11:15 on 419 on Green Valley Road at Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville, California, a gentleman and his son, 50 and 29, both from Watsonville, were pulled over by California Highway Patrol, and they were found to be on post-supervision release, so they went ahead and searched the car and found 4.9 pounds of cannabis in the car. So those two gentlemen were arrested on felony charges of possession of cannabis with intent to distribute and transportation of cannabis with intent to distribute and violation of felony probation. They were actually already on probation for another cannabis charge.
Yeah, they originally got in trouble before they actually continued to run a cannabis business after legalization, or they just never were able to make it into the licensed market. I never really got the exact backstory, but yeah, they were already in jail for cannabis. They were released, and then now they are back in jail for cannabis. And you know, this clearly is a father and son who want to be in the cannabis industry, and I just think that we have to continue to work on our legalization laws so people like this can be able to do something they clearly love to do, and they have the talent and the ability to do it, but the way the laws are set up, they're not allowed, and then they're back in jail.
Yeah, yeah, and let's talk. And that California law doesn't apply to large scale cultivation. It's only an acre or less. That's very small. That's craft cannabis at that point.
Yeah, for the farmers market.
Yeah, so they're not going to let like big conglomerates do. It's going to be small stuff like this. Like, and this is about what you'd bring to a farmers market. About 4.9 pounds. If you had a big backyard garden and you had a really good year, this is about what you'd be able to bring to market and keep what you wanted for the rest of yourself.
Yep.
So I don't know, and it's also unfortunate. There's some racial aspects in the policing here that I'm not comfortable speaking on. There's all kinds of problems with the war on drugs and how it's prosecuted still in legal cannabis states. They target certain individuals. Certain parts of California, if you drive through certain parts of California during certain times of year and you have out-of-state plates, they might pull you over just to check you out.
Yeah, sad story out of California. And I want to thank the audience for joining us this week. We are about to get out of here. I want to thank our guests for being on and thank our sponsors and everybody else who is supporting the show. We are about to get out of here, Dig. I hope you have a good week, man.
Hey, you too. See you next time.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Foles for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.